This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Our focus for most of this hour will be the Red Cross. The president of the American Red Cross and an operations director of the International Committee of the Red Cross will join us to talk about the different missions of those organizations, about lessons learned in response to Hurricane Katrina, about the extraordinary public response to that crisis and difficulties raising funds for subsequent disasters in Pakistan and Guatemala. We'll take your calls then. But we begin in Baghdad, where today is the first of a four-day national holiday as Iraqis prepare for Saturday's constitutional referendum. Earlier this week, the National Assembly adopted some new language designed to address the concerns of Sunnis. Both Iraqi and American officials hope that Sunni participation in the political process will erode support for the insurgency, which is largely based in Sunni areas. With the new language, at least one large Sunni political party now backs the Constitution. Many others are asking their supporters to vote no. If majorities in three provinces do vote no, the Constitution is defeated. As part of a series on Iraq's regions and the referendum this past week, we've invited Washington Post reporter Anthony Shadid to return to the program. He spent the last few days about 50 miles north of Baghdad in the city of Balad, where he talked with Sunnis and Shias from the city and the surrounding area. He joins us now from NBC's facilities in Baghdad. Nice to have you back on the program, Anthony.
It's nice to be here.
Now, let me begin by asking you, what is this area like? Describe it for us.
You know, Balad, like you said, is about 50 miles north of Baghdad. It's a predominantly Shiite city. The countryside around it is predominantly Sunni. Balad has, you know, already bears the scars of this election campaign. It was the site of a recent car bombing, actually three car bombings that killed 105 people. When you get out into the hinterland of the countryside, it's one of the arenas for the insurgency. There are often attacks, sometimes daily attacks, on U.S. troops in the smaller villages, places like Vuloria, Estapi, Azizo Balad. The insurgency in a lot of ways and the violence it's associated with it has kind of defined or ordered lives in that countryside.
Would you describe it as part of the Sunni triangle?
It definitely is. Now, you know, Balad, of course, is an exception, being a predominantly Shiite city, but the countryside itself is very much a part of the Sunni triangle, and the sentiments you hear, and those are often reflected in other parts of the region.
Well, let's stay with the Sunnis for a moment. The constitutional amendments that were approved this past week designed to encourage Sunnis to join into the political process and support the Constitution. How did Sunnis you talk to react to these changes? Were they aware of them?
You know, they were aware of them. Television plays a very powerful role in shaping opinion in Iraq, and the satellite channels have covered this pretty extensively. There was knowledge of the changes, some suspicion about how the changes came about, that there was probably pressure put up by the United States and the Iraqi government for some parties to change their opinion. But it also was clear that divisions had emerged within what had been a Sunni consensus until this week. There were some people reconsidering their no vote. Some people continued to say they would vote against it, and then some people saying they weren't going to take part in the process, that they really didn't believe in the process itself and were better off staying away from it.
When you were there, could you see preparations for the elections underway?
You know, in Balad itself, there are quite a few preparations. There are posters on buildings. They're usually catering toward a Shiite audience. Some of the posters say that, you know, voting in the referendum on Saturday is a way to obey the Murja, which is the supreme Shiite clerical leader. The other preparations are more security-oriented. There are already concrete barriers going up in front of polling stations. Some of them are waist-high, designed to deflect car bombs. Others are sometimes two stories high, which are there to protect against, you know, suicide bombings, car bombings, mortars, and that type of thing.
Is this seen as a critical event in Iraqi history?
Well, I think that's a good question. I think there's always an emphasis that we put on these events as journalists, looking at these as somehow seminal moments. I think we did that with the January election, and we're doing that to a certain degree with this referendum, whether or not Iraq's new constitution will be approved. I think when you get into places like in parts of the Sunni Triangle, when you get into the hinterland of Balad, though, it's interesting to see that the constitution is, at a certain extent, a sideshow, that the forces that are already shaping that region seem to be set to go forward regardless of whether there's a yes vote or a no vote. I was having a conversation with one doctor from a town called Vuloria, which is about probably 5 miles away from Balad. It's predominantly Sunni. It's been the site of a lot of attacks. And he made this point. He said, you know, whether the Constitution is approved or rejected, the insurgency itself is going to go on. And there was a sense in a conversation with him that that the Constitution, like I said, was a sideshow, that these forces, hardening sectarianism, the insurgency, the occupation, those were perhaps the greater forces shaping lives in the Sunni Triangle.
Well, let me ask you about a couple of the things that you mentioned there. And one of them is the forces in the insurgency, do the Sunnis that you talk to, do they support the insurgency, or do they do so reluctantly at gunpoint, if that might be said?
You know, in the Sunni Triangle in particular, this is probably where the most aggressive face of the U.S. occupation is seen. Often the interaction between some of these villages and the U.S. military is you know, through tanks and Apache helicopters and rifles. There's a deep resentment, grievances that have accumulated over the past 2 years, and it's difficult to see those grievances fading. The conversations I had with people, you know, from places like Zuloi and Azizabelad, they're very angry. They very much resented the presence of U.S. troops, and almost without exception, they said that the only way things were going to get better was that the U.S. military not necessarily withdrew from the country, but at least withdrew to their bases and no longer entered their towns and villages. That sentiment is expressed even when people say they're going to vote in the Constitution, and I think that adds a certain nuance to how this is unfolding. You know, participation in the referendum itself isn't a sign that there's somehow an acceptance of the American-backed project here. There does remain this deep resentment over the occupation in these areas. At the same time, people feel a certain desperation to have their voices heard in a constitution that will inevitably, you know, reshape their country to a degree.
The other word I wanted to ask you about was sectarianism. You mentioned three car bombs recently in Balad. Were they seen as anti-government or anti-Shia expressions?
Well, that's a good question, and I think, you know, the military, the American military at least, believes that those car bombs may have been motivated to suppress Shiite turnout on Saturday in the constitutional referendum. But they do kind of follow this pattern that you've seen elsewhere in places like Baghdad and some southern parts of Iraq, and also in places like Balad and Bakuba with Shiite populations, and that is, you know, these spectacles, this incredible carnage, deaths of scores of civilians that, you know, they're difficult to sometimes see a political message. Often they seem more motivated at creating this spectacle, creating this image of chaos that is part of that kind of information war, or that war of images that the insurgents fight with the American military.
And so in that respect, it might be seen as, well, certainly connected, not unconnected to the fact that there's a referendum to be held in a couple of days.
Yeah, it's difficult to say whether the bombing would have happened with or without the referendum. Like I said, it does follow this pattern, though, that we've seen since, you know, for nearly, almost a year and a half now of these high-profile terrorist acts that, mm-hmm. that do claim civilians more than any other lives.
Do the Shia who live in town in Balad, do they feel under siege?
You know, because it's a predominantly Shiite city and there are checkpoints, you know, on the outskirts, there's a certain, I wouldn't want to say tranquility, but there's a certain kind of order to life inside the city. There's very much a sense that there's insurgency going on outside those checkpoints in the countryside. But life does go on inside Balad. And I think there's a certain excitement, you know, in the city itself over the referendum, over the constitution. There's been backing of this constitution by the Shiite clergy, and the clerical leaders among the Shiite community play a very decisive role in getting out the vote, for instance, and shaping opinions toward the constitution. And you've seen a pretty aggressive role by the clergy in trying to get out the vote. Most of those banners, like I said, mm-hmm. you see in Balad about the constitution are about, you know, obedience to the clergy is by casting your vote yes for the constitution.
I wonder, there is another, I'm not sure spectacle is the correct word, but the trial of Saddam Hussein is scheduled to get underway in Baghdad next week. Are people talking about that as well?
You know, there's not as much talk as you'd expect about that. I mean, I think I heard it come up in one conversation today, and there was the idea, it was by a person that was kind of frustrated with this whole political process, and his argument was that the trial of Saddam was scheduled so soon after the Constitution to deflect any resentment that may have come out of the referendum, whichever way the referendum went. I think there's a certain expectation that it won't go on all that long necessarily when it convenes soon, maybe a couple of days, and then it might be postponed until later, to a later date. There is quite a bit in terms of the political process that still has yet to unfold. I mean, we have the referendum on Saturday, and then there's another election scheduled for December in which a permanent government will be chosen. And there is some sense that, you know, whether or not Sunnis approve of the American presence or they approve of the political process itself, there is a sense among Sunnis that they are going to turn out in far greater numbers in this vote on Saturday and then again in the vote in December, in stark contrast to what happened in January when they largely boycotted it, either due to threats by insurgents or a protest over a process they didn't endorse.
But if Sunnis turn out in large numbers to vote no for the most part, and the Constitution is nevertheless accepted by the majority of the country, is it going to be accepted in the areas outside of Balad?
Well, I think that's a key question, and I think, you know, what is the impact of this vote on that community? You know, my sense in the conversations, and granted these conversations aren't necessarily, you know, authoritative, but, you know, is that that alienation that's created within the Sunni community is created by forces that are kind of beyond the Constitution. It's the insurgency, it's the occupation, it's the lack of improvement in lives. And it's difficult to see how that Constitution changes those forces, how it blunts those forces. And, you know, several of the conversations, you know, people pointed out that they expected that, you know, they didn't use the word alienation necessarily, but they didn't see the anger or the resentment or the grievances as necessarily fading, you know, regardless of the vote on the Constitution.
We just have a little time with you, Anthony. The Constitution itself is a fairly abstract document. Might people be more engaged if they were talking about real issues, about power and clean water and those sorts of things?
Well, that's an excellent point. I think there is a certain disenchantment over the political process. In fact, when you ask people what they're voting for, it's less about the blueprint of a future state, and it's more the means to an end. In other words, by voting the Constitution, we're going to bring about a more stable Iraq, or we're going to bring about, you know, an improvement in our lives or an improvement in basic services. It's rarely are these issues like federalism debated necessarily, and more often it's seen as a means to, you know, to end this kind of prolonged interregnum that's been going on since the fall of Saddam.
Anthony Shadid, thank you very much. You talked to us twice this week. We do appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Washington Post reporter Anthony Shadid, he's also the author of Night Draws Near, Iraq's People in the Shadow of America's War, and he joined us by phone from NBC's facilities in Baghdad. Iraqis vote on their constitution on Saturday. To see a copy of the final draft of the Iraqi constitution, you can log on to our website at npr.org. And on Monday, we will preview the trial of Saddam Hussein, scheduled to begin next Wednesday. We'd like to hear from you. If you have questions about the charges, about the process, or about Iraq's judicial system, send them to us by email. TOTN@npr.org is the best way to reach us. Again, that's TOTN@npr.org. Coming up after the break, a conversation with the head of the Red Cross. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.